You're listening to the ISF Podcast, for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve speaks with Jimmy Lee, a leadership expert with decades of experience as a senior leader at companies like Boeing, Meta, and Microsoft. He explains that one of the most important things a business leader can do in times of crisis is to keep focus on the big picture and the long-term goals. Steve and Jimmy also discuss how to manage a team in a post-COVID workplace, building supply chain resilience, and why empathy matters more than ever.
Fantastic. Jimmy, lovely to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, you've got a really interesting background. I think one of the things that I read in the research was that your mission is to inspire leaders to build thriving enterprises. I thought that was particularly pertinent today, where so many businesses are finding it to be a bit of an uphill struggle. How do you see the market having changed over the last 6 to 9 months? What are the sorts of things that you're using to inspire leaders to really thrive in this very challenging market environment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of tools that I would typically lean on or go to, but the number one is honestly just empathetic connection.
Right.
It's really just connecting with the leaders and help them understand that they're not alone. I think a lot of times as a leader, you get too stuck in the problems that you start trying to solve, that you focus more on trying to solve them in the business, and you kind of go deeper instead of staying up at the leadership level and start working on the business itself. And so most of the tools that I start to tell them to try to help them understand and think about is what I call legacy defined. As I know you have some immediate problems right now, we're going to get to those. But more importantly, what are you really striving for? What is your life's mission? What is your why? Once we fix all these problems, where do you want to go in the future? What do you see yourself doing? Is it providing water in developing nations? Is it really focused on education or health or inequalities of some kind? Or what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind? And that really helps them pull themselves up and remain and get back into that leader mode, that CEO mode versus that I'm going to go fix it myself. It's been stuck. My team's not delivering. The business is going to crash. Let me get my hands on it and solve it. You need to think about it more like a leader. Let's figure out where you want to go long term. Now let's bring that back and start looking at, okay, what are we doing today to make that a reality? And are you close enough? Are you tired? Are you burned out? Have you run your course? Or if we're in this fight, okay, we're going to be in this fight. Let's get into it. But let's not just say you're going to solve it. Let's just look at the talent now. Let's look at the people. Do you have the right people in the right roles, doing the right things, focused on the right problems? Or do we need to adjust the people versus you getting your hands on in it?
It's interesting that you say that, because I think that resonates with all levels of leadership, right? Because people get so into it. I think it's really useful to suggest that stepping back, which of course everybody finds so difficult to do, particularly if you're used to being successful. Roll your sleeves up, get involved, dive in, we're going to fix it. And there's that impatience as well, isn't there, that so often takes over and causes you to just lose a sense of perspective, I would suggest. One of the other interesting things that I noticed that you pulled out in, again, some of the things I was looking at, was you work in the area of conflict resolution, effective conflict resolution at both executive and board levels. I wanted to talk to you about that, because so many of our listeners on this podcast, I think, find it difficult to navigate that. A lot of them in a security role, used to trying to protect things. Maybe the chief executive doesn't get it. They have to explain things at the board level. Boards have so many different priorities. Give us some insights in around how you can go about managing that sort of conflict.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like to hit it head on and say, typically as a security leader, as a risk leader, as a risk executive, typically when you're identifying the risk, you're right. You're absolutely right. The problem isn't necessarily whether you're right or wrong when it comes to conflict at the board level or at the C-suite level. The problem generally becomes, do they really understand what that risk means? I think that we find ourselves arguing or debating or getting into these intense kind of back and forth conversations and discussions, primarily not because, you know, we're right or wrong as a security leader. I think we're arguing against the misunderstanding of the calculation of the risk and what that means for the organization by the other person, the other party. And so when you only understand it and identify or get called in or flag these conflicts, it's really just about getting both people to sit down. And this is very fundamental, having an empathetic conversation both ways. And it gets back into this whole crucial conversation, being conflict forward, leaning into the fact that we are disconnected here. Okay, so we need to basically sit down and listen and at least make sure each other's being heard, right? Because typically the non-security leader is saying, yes, but we have this revenue number we need to hit. We have these pressures coming in. We have these outside influencers. We have this geopolitical instability. We have this economic instability. Now is our moment. If we miss this moment, if we refocus our talent and our attention, our budget toward the security issue and not against this business need or this business goal, we may not be able to recover. And the security leader is saying, yes, but if you don't address the security issue, forget the money we're trying to make. We're going to spend more than that in penalties and fines and loss of reputation and loss of confidence in our customers. And we're going to churn a lot of customers. So we need to focus on the security issues. And so both issues are pertinent. Both issues are relevant. Both issues are urgent. So how do we solve those? And it really gets down to making sure that executives and board members remember the training and get reantiquated with tools to have these conversations and make sure that they sit down with the goal of saying, okay, we have 30 minutes. And in this call, we're going to have two goals. First goal is to make sure each one of us heard. And second goal is a potential framework for a path forward. And when you time box that goal of saying, hey, we need to reach to an endpoint here. And also they need to be presented with the tools, the frameworks, the understandings of being able to address those together. And understand that whatever they decide, it's probably no right or wrong answer. But we need to do it as a group rather than as an individual.
You mentioned a few times there tools and frameworks. Give us some examples of what those might look like.
Yeah, I don't see myself as a professional coach, so I'm not going to be able to quote this framework or the others. And I'm not certified as a coach either. But the main tool and framework that I believe you first need to have is, first off, is it really helps if senior leadership, and this goes back to the CEO and to the board, are we crystal clear on what the North Star is?
Right.
And that's the most impactful tool is, are we crystal clear on what the North Star is? And secondarily, have we trained the team on how to have these conversations with each other? It's kind of like a marriage. All marriages, if they have any duration, go through different patches and different times and different periods and different seasons. And if they can last that 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of marriage, they will tell you, we had to figure out how to have arguments constructively, right? Not avoiding the conversation, but knowing we have to have the conversation, not delaying the conversation, not holding off on it, but leaning into it and saying, okay, there's a disconnect here, but also the timing. Right. If you've been married for any duration of time, you realize not all conversations are to be had at all times. Right. There's certain conditions and there's certain timings of having these conversations. And so as we can prepare the executives and the boards of saying, OK, we do have a board meeting, but maybe this board meeting is not the best time for us to work through this issue in a large group. There's only two of you that are disconnected. Why don't we have the board meeting and why don't the two of you meet next week and come to an agreement and then bring that back or communicate that out and your committees find that resolution as an executive team and say, okay, listen, we have to be responsible not only to our shareholders, not only to our customers, not only to ourselves, but also to our employees. We have a policy, a goal, a commitment to each other that we're not going to let these conversations languish more than a week, more than 2 weeks, right? So the structure of these frameworks that need to be customized, they need to be specialized for the organization, for the domain, for the field, for the industry, for that team, for the culture of that organization. But these are tools that everybody accepts. It's far greater than just a company, you know, handbook. It's far greater than the working methodologies of the executive teams, the expectations that you're given. It goes deeply into a person's ability to connect to the culture and the organization and that North Star. And that culture starts with the executive and rolls down here.
That reference that you make to the North Star, I think, is particularly helpful because certainly in a number of meetings that I've witnessed over the years, you run the risk sometimes, particularly if you're dealing with founders, entrepreneurs, high-stress individuals, people who thrive on that. There's this desire to win. So every meeting is an opportunity to demonstrate that you came out on top. And one of the biggest coaching takeaways that I think that we can offer up is to go back, as you put it, to the North Star, to go back to actually the purpose of the overall business, because every executive is in there to try to serve that. And so sometimes it's necessary to leave the ego at the door and just focus back in terms of how we're going to resolve this for the general good of the business, of the shareholders, of course, the employees too, because we shouldn't forget them in that mix.
Yeah, I love that. And in addition to that, if we can go just a little bit deeper, is when I envision this North Star, I envision it as the North Star of the overall company.
Right.
And so I think that a lot of times you get executives that will sometimes recategorize. I don't want to say miscategorize or misunderstand. I want to say they'll recategorize that North Star to say, okay, this means the North Star for a security organization, and we're going to reduce risk by a factor of 15% this year. Or we have a goal of make sure that we eliminate, you know, our tech debt and our security tech debt and our security issues by 25% year over year. And that's our North Star. So when they go into the executive meeting and they're starting meeting with the CFO, whose job is to increase revenues 40% year over year and reduce expenditures by 15%,
right.
And then the CIO has a different focus and the COO is on a different focus, and they have marketing and sales, and everybody gets in that room and everybody's got their own idea of what that North Star is. That is the best framework and the best kind of environment and ecosystem for conflict that we could ever identify. It goes back to the CEO. And the CEO saying, okay, listen, we all have goals. We all have our slice of the apple on how we're going to fit this North Star, but this is the true goal. And so now the next piece, that next tool that I want to just make sure that we capture in a conversation outside of just being able to discuss in a North Star, it's really having a strong goal framework. And I'm a fan of OKRs. They're super simple. Star goals get really complex and you get people spending 2 months trying to define goals. It's like, no, instead of taking just 15 minutes, just your OKR, what is your objective? And what are your key results on how you're going to track and understand that? And you're not going to nail it down. Just write it down and let's watch it over the next few weeks and we'll perfect it. We'll iterate on it. We'll get it better, right? So now when you have these OKRs, now you have a way of saying, okay, now each org has their OKR. They all roll up to a North Star. But now with that, those tools and that framework around the OKRs, we can adjust things to make sure we hit that company goal, and we can know the impact that we made on the security org, the impact we made on marketing or HR. Or sale. And we know what focus and budget we took away from them in order to land that OKR. So now that we can readjust their goal. They're taking a hit on what they can achieve based upon the company's overall goal. So now we're going to readjust their objective so that we're not alienating them and asking them to do the impossible because we ran out of resources and we failed to plan.
I like the fact that you're putting these time-bound parameters around it too, because so often things just drag on, don't they? And that focus on getting it done, it may not be perfect, but we're reaching a conclusion within a particular period of time, really does focus the mind. One of the other things that you touched on there was this empathy. And very often people say to me, again, if I come back to the security space, a lot of focus at the moment on trying to increase the amount of soft skills that security leaders have because they can work more collaboratively. Empathy, though, can it be taught? Because that's a question that I'm often asked. And I'm just interested in your perspective on that.
I rarely say these words. When it comes to something so important as empathy, it rings so true. And that is sometimes people need to really start to fake it. And I'm not saying be disingenuous, unauthentic. But when it comes to empathy, I believe it absolutely can be taught. But people need to understand not only the company's why, not only the organization's why, but I think they also need to understand their why. And I think empathy comes from a position of confidence and of connection. It's sometimes hard to be empathetic with another organization's impact on what I'm asking them to do as a security professional if I don't fully understand what they're up against. And so as I tell people, when I'm fulfilling that role of fractional or VCSO or part-time CISO or sometimes full-time CISO, I said, listen, I'm an engineer first. So when I'm talking to an engineering org, I'm not going to go into them and say, hey, we have the security vulnerability that our tool slide, I created a JIRA ticket and it's a blocking bug you can't push out until you fix this issue. I said, hey, I see you're working on an issue. You're super close.
Right.
Looks amazing. Hey, can we sit down? I'd really like to understand your workflow. One of our tools flagged a security issue, and it's a big one, but I don't want to just try to start raising the red flags. It is a P1. It's got to get done. It's high priority, or P0, however you organize your JIRA tickets. But before I put that in the system, I'd like to talk to you about your code, talk through it with you. Understanding the workflow you're going through and understanding how much time and energy and effort it's going to take you to fix this. And I'm an engineer. You're not going to lose me. Can we just jump on a quick call and talk about it? Right? That's that more empathetic approach as a security professional. But are we really training our security professionals with that depth of engineering knowledge and skill sets that's really going to give them that confidence to approach that conversation with empathy, with the seeking to understand, but having a frame of reference to understand how complex that other org is? That gets down to this point of, can you teach empathy? You absolutely can, especially if you flag, it's not us versus them.
Right.
It's not you versus them. It's always we all succeed or fail together. And if we don't work together, we will most assuredly fail at some point. And so let's avoid that failure cycle and let's find a way to work together. Now, there's mixed matches. There's some people that just don't want to engage, but that's an HR problem. Mm-hmm. That's a leader problem. That's a leadership expectation problem.
One of the other things that people often ask me as well is, you know, using your example there, they say to me, Steve, back in the pre-COVID era, it was so much easier to get those kinds of conversations. I could just walk up to Susan's office. I could knock on the door. There she was. We could thrash it out. And now we're remote. Everything's on Teams or Zoom or whatever it is. Nobody ever picks the phone up. And so the tension begins to rise. The stress begins to rise. When you actually do get to see somebody, then you're ready to go at it rather than be able to take a much more measured approach to it. So what advice have you got for people who are working now in these remote environments?
Yeah, one of the terms that we're starting to see emerge, which, you know, I'm definitely a fan of, is what they call intrapreneur. You have that entrepreneur who's going to go outside and build something on their own. But what about that intrapreneur? And intrapreneur language or a reference is really to encapsulate, to give some sort of a container for this multifaceted sets of skills that go beyond just building or your technical domain or the industry knowledge that you are. Just being a subject matter expert isn't enough anymore. You kind of need to be that mini, that's emerging, that basic skill set sales leader, that basic marketing leader, that person that's like that multifaceted, call it now full stack CEO, full stack founder. They can do some of the marketing, the sales, the business development, the operations. They can do the strategy as well as understand some of the high-level architectures for the product and overall integration into the market. And so as we start to get to this disconnect from interpersonal skills from a professional perspective, we now need to start looking at and asking ourselves, are we equipping our employees to actually have the broad skill sets, these soft skills? So how do we get them to connect over Zoom? Often says you can't activate trust you haven't built yet.
Right.
And so part of this intrapreneur nomenclature is really getting us back to, are all of our employees working on building relationships with other departments when they don't need them? Is there a constant, consistent integration efforts where they're looking to meet with people to understand their roles? I have been shocked as I'm getting more and more into the business development aspects myself, how open people are in talking about themselves.
Right.
How much subject matter experts love to talk about their domain. I learned that early on from my early days at Boeing and Microsoft and Meta, right? One of the best things you can do is, oh, I have a couple of 20 minutes. Oh, Sarah, John, sitting right over there, they don't seem like they're deeply engaged in their project or they're walking around the micro kitchen. Let me stop. Let me chat. Let's ask them how things are going. Or you can just, from a virtual perspective, you look at the calendar. Oh, they have a wide open slot. I know that they just landed one of the biggest projects yet. This might be just a great time to just reach out and congratulate them on their delivery.
Right.
Congratulate them on the release. And that's the only goal. 15 minutes, 30 minutes. And you use that time to just say, hey, this is amazing. Hey, can you show me how you do what you do? You know, and if you're authentic and genuine and not trying to be, I don't want to use the word pretentious, trying to be unauthentic and ungenuine, they would be more than happy to share with you that what they've been working on. They're probably mentally tired, so they're probably not going to go in and jump into anything else yet. So they're putting a meeting on the books. You help them that aspect, and you're actually building a relationship. Now, once that relationship is built, and to your point earlier, how do you really develop these soft skills? Now, when you need that trust, now you can activate it. Now you've got an open line of communication with John or Sarah or whatever the names might be. And now you can actually start to say, hey, Sean, Sarah, hey, listen, this security bug came up. It's in your area. I know you kind of walked me through some of the things you do before. I know you have another big release coming up. I'm going to put this in the system. I'd love to just chat with you first so we can get ahead of it. And so that we can have a unified perspective on how we want to handle it and take this up the chain and get some approvals on it. That goes way easier. Now, the first time you do that, wow. Now they're saying, okay, now this is pretty serious. But what happens on a Friday afternoon when everybody's gone and you found that P1 bug or that P0 security bug, and now you got to log that in the system and you know it's going to create some ripple effects and you might accidentally forgot to ping John or Sarah.
Right.
Now, rather than just them getting truly offended and truly defensive, and they reach out and say, hey, how come you didn't ping me this? Oh, I sincerely forgot. It's my bad. I made that mistake. It's on me. I'll let them know. Can we chat real quick? And I'll revise my communications out. And I apologize. I found it. I was rushing to get to my kid's soccer game. And I sincerely apologize. But now you had some trust to work off of. If you didn't have that trust and that mistake happened, it's an uphill climb to get to a point of good with that person now. I don't know that we're equipping our employees, that we're actually giving our teams that visibility, that knowledge, that training, that understanding. And that kind of training is, I think, most often better delivered in person versus through virtual. But are we as companies, are we as leaders investing in our training budget in that kind of way to target those areas?
Yeah, I think you make some really valid points there, because all too often, of course, that those are the sorts of things that just get passed by as we become busy, as perhaps time becomes really hard to get hold of. And a lot of businesses that I know today who are seeing budget cuts, that whole sort of training element tends to go, but it results very much in a siege mentality, which is what we're trying to avoid. We're trying to be as open as possible to talk about some of these issues. And there will always be really thorny, problematic things that we need to overcome. And so the point you make about building that trust, having at least the groundwork done to be able to then move on to having some of those complex conversations. The amount of time that is invested in that really shouldn't be underestimated. And the value that you will get from it down the road at some point will be immense. And hopefully our listeners will be able to relate to some of those things and some situations where perhaps they've either done it or indeed haven't done it. And maybe that's some advice for them going forward. I wanted to talk to you, Jimmy, about the general sort of geopolitical climate at the moment, because it's something, again, that a lot of people talk to me about. So difficult to divorce what's going on in the business now from what's happening geopolitically. How do you see the geopolitical climate at the moment affecting businesses in general? What are some of the things that you would advise leaders to start doing today?
It's an interesting time where there's a lot of encouragement, a lot of concern. A lot of businesses, whether they be startups, SMBs, middle market, or enterprises, didn't fully realize the integration of their supply chain and the dependence that they have on their operations and growth and success. I think we sometimes take for granted, it's been the Silicon Valley model for years and big corporations for years of saying, I'm doing business with another U.S. entity. It just makes it easy from a legal perspective, from a risk perspective, from a compliance and governance. It's super simple from our legal standpoint. They're a U.S. company. They have certain covers of business insurance, and there's a certain level of traction and history that we can look up and say, okay, they're a legitimate business, and we understand what they do. We're going to work with them. Now, they're going to go and they're going to work with businesses all over the world, and they're going to be our kind of intermediary. And they're going to handle all the complexities that are out there, and they're going to bring in our products. They're going to help us find our talent. They're going to help us find our components, our ingredients, our lower level systems that make up our bigger systems. They're going to help us source different vendors and platforms and technologies. They're going to do all that work for us. And we're not going to have to employ somebody because, for first off, we don't know how to manage those skills. Like, we don't have the framework to build on those skills. And so we're going to use those other companies. And that made a lot of sense for a long time until they started to realize, and this happens in from Fortune 50 to Fortune 100 to 200 to Fortune 2000 down to companies that are private, that are not on the Fortune list, that don't have as much revenue. It hits small and medium-sized businesses such as your local restaurant, your local laundromat, your local hardware store, your local manufacturing company. Everybody's impacted because you took a dependency on that intermediary's company's ability to navigate the geopolitical landscape and be resilient around the impacts of what's happening economically through those geopolitical shifts. And as those geopolitical shifts start to shift global trade writ large and start to impact the supply chains and the abilities to import, export, or just acquire talents, whether it be inside of the U.S. or globally, now you have this issue where you didn't fully realize how much power and control that external intermediary company had on your growth and your success and your reliability. And so as the geopolitical landscape starts to shift, it starts to impact the economics and the supply chain of you being able to get your access on those products, goods, or services at the same price or sometimes altogether. I can't tell you how many small businesses that I've talked to over the last 4 to 5 weeks that said, we completely shut down our doors.
Right.
Because once those tariffs started to hit place, those prices just went skyrocketing. And I can't tell you how many personal products that I've done through Kickstarter or whatever kind of campaign, and they're saying, hey, listen, we are dead in the water in shipping anything to the U.S. or Canada because of these tariff costs.
Right.
And we're saying, okay, whoa, I didn't realize it was going to impact like a tea maker. Wow, that's serious. But that's also the same for talent, right? You get these different costs and you get to these sometimes these blocks on exports, specifically in cybersecurity, we're dealing primarily with cryptographic information, which is one of the biggest red flags for exporting. And so I think what companies are starting to realize, they cannot take a deep dependency on even intermediaries anymore, and they need to have more visibility, more influence, and quite frankly, more control over the end-to-end supply chain of what it takes to run their company. Now, some companies are going to say, hey, we're just a small local company here in the United States. All of our parts are built and made in the U.S. That's amazing. But are all your core minerals also made in the U.S.? A lot of times we don't do enough research, do enough deep diving to figure out exactly where each and every component comes from. Taking my time at Boeing, down to the steel or down to the actual lowest level ingredient that it takes to create that product, that wing, that bolt, that wrench. A lot of attention was put into where are they sourcing all those materials? Where is the alternate source coming from? And I think this is where you get this imbalance coming into the conversation, where large enterprises have the resources. They have the ability to attract the talent or hire the consultants or find the experts to do that for them. When you get down to the tech stack to middle market or small to medium-sized businesses that don't necessarily even have the awareness that could be a problem, I think the geopolitical landscape is potentially going to shift the ability of the visibility and the approach and the strategy from small to medium-sized businesses and middle market to have more attention on that supply chain. Because when it comes to geopolitical instability, when it comes to geoeconomic macro and the micro instability, resilience is key. Resilience is the lifeblood. Resilience is your ability to last, to withstand the fluctuations. But if you don't have enough visibility and awareness of all the different components that are impacted, you can't navigate those waters.
Oh, I think that's fantastic advice. I think that shift from risk management to resilience is a really important one that I think a lot of people are struggling with at the moment as well, because it does require a total shift. You do have to step back, look at your overall business landscape, the supply chain, as you rightly point out, and go down and look not just at the value or the cost of certain components, but what they actually do in your supply chain. And so often it's the very low cost items that bring things to a grinding halt, because they were just ignored because they went under the radar. And that's a significant change, I think, that we all have to come to terms with. Jimmy, time is against us. Look, it's been fantastic talking to you. We've covered a whole range of different areas there. Some really useful takeaways, I'm sure, for our listeners around building trust, around the need for empathy, around just having basic conversations, being human, reaching out to people, overcoming challenges by just simply being who we are. So thank you so much indeed for sharing those. And I'm sure that people will listen to this episode and go away with a number of different takeaways that they can put into practice straight away. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. And if I have a brief moment to just leave behind a statement here, if that's okay. One of the biggest terms that we've heard in late 2023, early throughout 2024, was about this bill of materials, which is the core components for kind of what makes up a cybersecurity product or any product in general. Also like to state that is when we talk about supply chain, we're really talking about that bill of materials, what makes up the components. And it's nice from a cybersecurity perspective to work with startups. I love working with startups. The number one problem that they also have, though, is are they going to be resilient? And do you have a backup plan if those startups don't quite work out? The last thing I'll leave companies with is I have this running joke or statement on the definition between, hey, I'm a business and I know I need help in these areas. Do I find a coach or do I find an advisor? And one of the things that I explain it to people is, you know what, I've learned that coaches are sometimes necessary when you need somebody to stick with you, be with you for the long term to really get you to a point of growth. But where I see an advisor is like POTUS, the president of the United States, has advisors, not coaches.
Right.
Those advisors are only there while they're providing value. When they stop providing value, they're gone, whether they hit their time or they don't, right? And so as a business leader, start looking at, okay, hey, this is a soft area for me. I need to get this fixed. Is the cost of inaction greater than the cost of action? If it is, then you need to act, find the right advisor, and only keep that advisor as long as they're providing value.
I think that's a really good point to finish with. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that, Jimmy. It's been great talking to you.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
Special thanks to this week's guest, Jimmy Lee. We'll be back with another new episode next week. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become an ISF member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.